Well, there is a blessing that has been handed down from generation to generation to generation to generation. And as I was thinking about this message and I was praying about this message, and not just that, but the whole series that we're in, I felt like I was hearing this, that let's make sure that we pass this blessing along to those who come after us, especially when you're in seasons like this one right now. It's a familiar blessing to many people because it goes back so long. What we do is I say, may the shalom peace of the Lord be with you all. And then the way you respond with that blessing back to me is, and also with you. So can we sincerely do that? Wherever you are right now online, those of us right here, receive this blessing. May the shalom peace of the Lord be with you all. Thank you. Thank you so much. I think we're going to start doing that a little more regularly here because we all need that. Well, do you know what would be a huge step in the direction of peace right now? I mean, this is a dream. So don't laugh out loud as I'm describing this, but this would be such a step towards peace. Can you imagine if the candidates for president, Trump and Harris, along with their vice president candidates, can you imagine if they came to a joint press conference together, side by side, and they said something like this: we're sorry. They're already laughing. Imagine this. They said, we're sorry. What we need to do together, what we need to do is we need to come together. We need to do that as a nation. The challenges that we're facing are far too big. The problems we're facing are too complex. And the stakes for getting this wrong are way too high for us to be behaving the way that we've been behaving. We are the United States. We've always been at our best when we've come together. We're always at our worst when we lose sight of that. So, as candidates, we're going to acknowledge that we disagree about a lot of things, but that can be one of our strengths. The healthy exchange of ideas, it can make a good idea even better. Can you imagine them saying this? So starting today, we are committing ourselves to doing the very best to model what disagreeing well looks like. And we've instructed each of our teams to do the same. And here's what we're going to ask of all of you. We're going to ask that all of you follow our example and hold us accountable to this. Can you imagine that? All four of them. Can you imagine the tone that that would set? Not just for our country, but for the world. Instead, I can't count the times where I've watched a candidate. They look right in the camera and they give us a focus group tested line about the importance of reaching across the aisle. You've heard that, right? And then within that same talk, what do? They model the opposite right after they say those words. Well, if you're taking notes, I want to invite you to write this down. Today's political landscape resembles trench warfare. Now, for those who downloaded the note sheet, if you put in dumpster fire, I'll give you, give you partial credit for that. But I really think this idea of trench warfare, it's an accurate framework for what we're seeing. In trench warfare, what do? You pick your side. You get with your people and your side in your trench, you dig in, and then you fire your weapons at anyone else that you see moving outside of your trench. Those who study these things, they say things like this. They say the starkest dividing line in America today, it's not race, it's not religion, it's not economic status, but rather what? Party affiliation. We even use phrases like battleground states, don't we, to describe it. And within those red and blue states, now we're seeing more and more division even within that. You got red and blue counties. You got red and blue cities. You got red and blue neighborhoods. You get red and blue school districts. You have red and blue businesses now. We're even seeing it happen with families. We're seeing it happen with churches. A while back, the person who cuts my hair, we have some very interesting conversations. And she said, Chris, there is a movie that came out this spring called Civil War. You got to see this movie. And so I watched this movie. In that movie, there is this really chilling scene. So there's a group of journalists, and they come across some of their friends. Some of their friends are being held at gunpoint by this militia. And so they decide, we got to try to save our friends. It's really done really well, this scene. And so they come out with their hands up. And they're like, don't shoot, don't shoot, don't shoot. They said, we're Americans. And the guy holding, one of the guys holding the gun says, what kind? What kind? There's a lot of that going on, isn't there? I've seen both of our candidates for president. Again, using focus group tested lines about being the candidate to reach across the aisle. And then again, what do? In often that same speech, they model the opposite behavior. Over the last 2 weeks, Dr. Joel did a great job of pointing out that there are people who profit from division. They are. Today's votes and clicks, they're yesterday's plunder from the battlefield. It's just a different way of gaining that. There will always be those who profit from war, which is one of the reasons why we're seeing so much division between the political right and the political left. Many people, you feel like, I've got a choice to make. I got a choice. It's either elephant or donkey, right? A lot of people, it's one of those to which a lot of people are like, I want to go with option three here. I'd rather go with ostrich right now. Wake me when this is over, right? With a show of hands, how many say there's got to be a better way? There's got to be a better way than what we're seeing all around us. That's what this teaching series is about. In part one of this teaching series, we trace the word politics all the way back to the Greek origins of the word. At its core, politics, it's about how you do life together. That's what it's supposed to be. How do you do life together? And we had a very candid conversation that first week about how the stakes are way too high to sit on the sidelines. Especially we're called to care for our neighbors. We got a civic responsibility to engage in ways that help strengthen our social fabric. And not just of our communities, we got a responsibility because we are the most influential nation on the planet. And what we do affects the rest of the world. So this matters. That was part one. Part two and three, we laid our foundation for the whole rest of the series. We began in the book of Genesis, where God brought order from chaos. He created people to dwell in communion with him and one another. But then, people rebelled. And we rebelled against our Creator and his framework of doing life together. We started to create our own rules. And how's that working for us? That's so good. All right, in part three, we jump from Genesis, first book of the Bible, to Revelation, the last book of the Bible, where we read about a vision that the disciple named John had of the throne room of God. And in that vision, it was clear, there's only one. There's only one who's worthy, there's only one who's able to make all things right. So here's what we're going to do today. Today we're going to have a conversation. What does it mean to pledge allegiance to him? What does that mean? What does that look like? If you're taking notes, I invite you to write this down. Good things happen when we follow Jesus out of the trenches. Can I get an amen? Good things happen. One of the things that has been so encouraging as we've been digging into the prep for this series is I've come across so many encouraging stories. So many encouraging stories like this one. This one happened on September 16th, 2017. On that day, a man named Hawk Newsom, who is the president, at least was at that time, the president of Black Lives Matter New York, he had come to Washington, D.C. Why did he come to Washington, D.C.? Because there was a Trump rally at Washington, D.C. So he wanted to come and have a counter protest to this, what was they called the mother of all rallies. Now, to his surprise, he got there. And do you know what the organizer of the Trump rally did? He invited him up on the stage. He said, let me give you 2 minutes for you to come up and share your thoughts. Here's a picture from that event. And I want to encourage you, look this up online. Google this. And I want to encourage you, don't do the ones that are all pieced together. Look at the raw cell phone footage of this. It is remarkable. Newsom actually had people at this Trump rally cheering. He had them cheering because, one, he said a quick prayer before he got up on stage. And then two, he decided, why don't I try building off of common ground? And so he said things like, the beauty of America is when you see something broken, you can mobilize to fix it. And you know what the people did? They're like, yeah, we agree with that. He said this, he goes, we're not anti-cop. He said, we're anti-bad cop. To which the people, what do you think? Yeah, so are we. And the crowd cheered again. And then he closed with this. He said, if you really want to make America great, we got to do it together. And the crowd went wild. Yeah. And so he's getting down from the stage after his 2 minutes. Little lady in the front's handing him an American flag. He's getting high fives. He's getting hugs. Get this. Before he went home that day, he had become a Facebook friends with the leader of a 4,000-man militia. He was now Facebook friends with him. There was another guy, one of the leaders of a group called Bikers for Trump, asked him, would you come take a picture with me and my son? Would you come and take a picture? That's the kind of modeling that we need to see more of from our leaders. If you want to hear more stories like this, again, I did as much reading and researching as my schedule allowed. I invited feedback from our team. We put together an entire suite of resources. Go to Emmanuel.Church/resources. You're going to find books. You're going to find videos. You're going to find articles, all kinds of stuff. But more than anything else, we want to share what the Bible teaches about these things. So if you have your Bible with you, please open with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 10 through 11. And if you don't have a Bible at home, we would love for you to just hit pause right now. Go to Bible.com. They've got an amazing Bible app that you can download for free on that site. All right, so here's the context for this letter. At this point in history, Christianity was spreading. It was spreading all around the region. It was spreading into countless different political settings, including a city called Corinth. Paul had started a church there, and that church was a mess. Was it 2 summers ago when we went through 1 Corinthians? We went through this book. Man, they had some huge problems. And out of all of these huge problems that they've got in Corinth, you know what was the first thing that Paul addressed? Division. It is the first one of all these major problems he addresses. So take a look at this. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10. I appeal to you, brothers, sisters, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree and that there be no divisions among you, but that you may be united in the same mind and in the same judgment. All right, this is really interesting. So Paul, what he does, he starts us off by referring to us as family, brothers and sisters. And then another thing he does, he uses this Greek word for unity that is used elsewhere for physically mending a net, fixing a net. And then to describe the word division, Paul uses the Greek word schisma, which is used elsewhere in the Bible to describe a tearing of a garment. So consider the vivid imagery there of what Paul is saying in the original Greek. Paul's saying, you're not doing the work of mending. You're not doing the work of bringing together and restoring. What are you doing? You're tearing this community apart. And you're not just tearing apart any community. You're tearing apart something that's supposed to be a Christ community. Well, as a community of Christ followers, here's something we can offer. If you're taking notes, I invite you to write this down. Disciples of Jesus have an opportunity and a responsibility to model bonding and bridging behaviors in a deeply divided world. Bonding and bridging. What are bonding behaviors? Bonding behaviors are just that. They're behaviors that help bond you with another group, like with your people. Bridging behaviors are investments that you make in others who are not already in your group. What are disciples of Jesus called to do? We're called to do both. The bonding and the bridging. The kind of bonding that you have with a tight, closely knit family. And then also engage in the kind of bridging that Paul will later describe as the ministry of reconciliation. All right, so here are some ways we can do this. Here's some ways we can model healthy and helpful behaviors that both bond and bridge. And it all begins here. If you're taking notes, I invite you to write this down. Pledge allegiance to Christ. He's the one that gets this. He's the one that modeled this. It all starts there. And then when it comes to all other allegiances, here is some great language that I came across. If you affiliate with a political party, group, or organization, lean, don't bow. Isn't that good? Lean, don't bow. We're going to have different perspectives. We're going to lean certain ways, and that's good. Because the only way to solve complex problems is get a whole lot of different people looking at it, right? From different angles. That's how we solve things that are challenging and complex. Where we cross the line is when you don't just lean towards a position, towards a party, towards a group, but when you end up bowing to them. Here's an example of a book, from a book called The Party Crasher. For those of you who are here and in person, you can pull this out in your insert. You see this insert with these little charts, pull that out. We're going to put this on the screens for those of you who are at home. Here's a great little tool that helps describe some of this. So you've got the Y, the vertical axis, a continuum between postmodern and modern. You've got then from going from left to right, you've got political left and political right. And what does that do? It creates this grid of these different positions that are common that people hold. You've got progress, you got responsibility, you got security, you got identity, things that are important to those folks. Well, which of these positions has something valuable to add? They all do. All of them have something to add to the conversation. If we were in a small church right now, a healthy small church, that could have these kind of conversations, we could go through specifics that every one of these positions has something to offer to the situations. But do you see what Butler, Joshua Ryan Butler, he's the one that created this graph. Do you see what he calls this graph? He calls it the four what? Political religions. The four political religions. That's what happens when you got a lot of bonding, but you don't have bridging. In his book, Butler describes the religion of the modern thinking political left. He says there's high priests and evangelists, people like Bono, Bill Gates, the Clintons. You can find their sacred texts for that camp on CNN, NPR, New York Times. He says they got a temple. In that group, the temple is the university. Then he describes the religion of the modern thinking political right. He said they've got their high priests and evangelists too. People like Ronald Reagan, Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson. He says, where are their holy texts? Their holy texts are Fox News, Daily Wire, Wall Street Journal. He said, where's their temple? He goes, their temple is the suburban two-parent home with a three-car garage. Then you got the religion of the postmodern thinking political right. They got high priests and evangelists. People like Dana White, Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson. You can find their sacred text, Newsmax, Truth Social, Breitbart. Where's their temple? Their temple's America. Then you've got, last of all, the religion of the postmodern thinking political left. They got high priests too and evangelists. People like Lady Gaga, Lil Nas, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Where are their sacred texts? You find them on TikTok, Instagram. Where is their sacred temple, he says? It's the protest. That's their temple. If you find yourself bonding with one of these four camps, if you're like, yeah, that actually describes me, if you're bonding but there's very little bridging going on, you're not alone. Because this is really common. People have been doing that ever since humanity rebelled against God's kingship in Genesis. We found our people, our camps. We see this in the Corinthians text. Let's go back. 1 Corinthians. Let's pick up basically where we left off. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Take a look at verse 12. He goes, here's what I mean by this. Each one of you says, I follow Paul, or I follow Apollos, or I follow Cephas, or I follow Christ. Right? So this was going on then too, in that time, in that place, just like today. People weren't just leaning, they were identifying as a follower of Paul or Apollos or Cephas. Some of them were saying, hey, I follow Paul. And if you're going to hit a subscribe button, Paul's a great pick. He's a brilliant prolific writer. He's the founder of their church. He's their spiritual leader. Supernatural power flowed through him. And no one had done more to demonstrate a radical and sacrificial commitment to Christ than Paul. Others are saying, no, I follow Apollos. Hey, if you're going to like and subscribe, that's another great pick. From what we know about Apollos, he was the TED talker of his time. He sometimes needed help with finer points of doctrine, but this guy, he could hold his own on any main stage in Corinth. And then you got others who are saying, I follow Cephas. You're going to like and subscribe. Why not go with him? Paul's talking about Peter here, the inner circle disciple. His name means the rock. He's walked on water. He was chosen by Jesus to lead a church in Jerusalem. All of these people added something to the conversation. So the issue here is not like these three people are knuckleheads. They don't listen to any of them. It's what was going on is people were identifying more with those people than they were with Christ. Bonding, not bridging. I agree wholeheartedly with this quote that I came across. The church does not exist to provide religious sponsorship to anyone's programs. Can I get an amen? What if, instead of just mirroring what we see in culture, where we pick our trench, we treat everybody else with different ideas, they're the enemy. What if, instead of doing that, we modeled a sincere desire to listen and understand? What if we did that and actually build bridges? I really, really, really love and appreciate the research. One of my favorite books that I came out of this series with is this one. It's called Love Your Enemies by Arthur Brooks. I love how research-based all of his stuff is in his book. Now, I love what he says specifically about what we're going to talk about now, because I'm not a natural compromiser. I'm not a natural compromiser. What I want to see instead of just muddied compromise, I want to see the best ideas come forward. And I think most people do, if you really talk to them. We want the best ideas come forward. How does that happen? How do you get the best ideas? To develop excellent ideas, Brooks says, we need competing ideas. And he goes on to say, what I'm not saying is that everyone's ideas are equally valid. I'm not saying that. He calls, that's a garbage standard. He goes, let's really have these robust debates. Here's how he says it in his own words. He goes, we need Republicans and Democrats to argue fiercely over the best ways to combat poverty, reduce dependency, and give more Americans the opportunity to achieve the happiness of earned success. We need conservatives and liberals to fight vigorously over the best ways to protect national security while also preserving our individual liberties. We need the left and the right to debate energetically the best ways to improve education so that the next generation has the tools to pursue and achieve the American dream. We want a safer, fairer, more prosperous country. We just disagree on how to achieve that aim. We need a passionate competition of ideas so that each side refines its solutions, becomes more innovative, and therefore the best ideas rise to the top. We've got a lot more in common than most people who are stuck in the trenches realize. And that person that you've been told to hate, they might have a piece of the puzzle that we're missing. So let's do our part. Let's do our part to model this kind of thoughtful, helpful, productive debate and conversations that focus on the issues instead of attacking one another. All right, before we move on, I want to quickly look at one more way that people have identified as Christian, one more way that people are dividing up into camps. As I've been listening to and reading and watching, I've seen a whole lot of people pick one of these two positions, and these are on for your insert. These are in there too. We'll also put this a little graph up on your screens. I see a lot of people picking one or the other of these. Either prophetic witness or something resembling the Seven Mountains mandate. When it comes to prophetic witness, there's a whole lot of people who are saying, I can really identify with the whole idea of people getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden. I can identify with Daniel in Babylon. I can identify with the early Christians in Rome. We're the church in exile. And what we need to do is avoid all the corrupting influences of politics. Let's just let other people do the politics. Let's us be the church. So there's a lot of people that feel that way. Then there's versions of this one, the Seven Mountains mandate, where they're like, no, you have to work in the system. Work within the system. Actively seek to influence seven aspects of society: family, religion, education, media, business, government, arts, and entertainment. Do it from within. Okay, so this framework, we could spend a lot of time talking about this, but this framework, there's more political crossover than the other ones. You can see people jumping from different political parties to either one of these. Here's what I'd like you to write down and remember. If you find yourself aligning with one of these, or if you're having a conversation with someone who does, Remember that you are an ambassador with voting rights. Remember both of those things. You're an ambassador with voting rights. If you embrace the importance of working within the political system, remember you're an ambassador for another kingdom. It's so important to not lose sight of that. Because you can get in the inner workings and you become like all the other people in the world who are working the political system instead of modeling something different from within. So if you want to say, I want to work within the system, remember I'm an ambassador of another kingdom as I do. When it comes to if you lean prophetic witness, that's where you also want to remember, and you've got voting rights. And that's something really, really special. In fact, it would be really challenging, I think, to come up with a long list of things that are more practical ways that you can make a difference in society besides voting well. Because that affects our leaders we choose. It affects the policies that are written. There's almost nothing that's more practical than that. N.T. Wright, he tends to be very measured with his words, but in this book, another one of the favorites of the ones I was looking at, this book, Jesus and the Powers, he talks with some pretty strong language. He and his co-author, they call out straw man arguments and naive thinking that often comes out of the prophetic witness camp. Here's how he puts it. Look, listen to this. He goes, "We're no fans of theocracy nor the divine right of kings. Yet, when we hear that complaint, we always have a standard answer. Yes, of course you want to avoid the evils of Constantine and Christendom. Instead of seeking influence in the halls of power, you want to be the angry prophet on the margins, speaking truth to power. Okay, all well and good. But what happens when the power listens?" That kind of absolute separation of church and state, it's fine if you want to be a critic making snarky criticisms on the sidelines, but if you want to change the game, you need skin in the game. God intends humans should share in the running of his world. Structures through which this happens are not automatically evil. As with everything else in God's creation, once they stop being worshipped, they stop being demonic. Bottom line, if you lean prophetic witness or if you lean seven mountains, the bottom line is this: the Christian vocation is neither pious longing for heaven nor scheming to make Jesus king by exerting force over unwilling subjects. What we believe in is a theopolitical gospel that declares Jesus is Lord and Caesar is not. That's well-worded insight. So, if you want to live this out, pledge allegiance to Christ. Lean, don't bow. Remember, you're an ambassador with voting rights. And here's one more principle that I encourage you to write down. Treat contempt like a warning light on your dashboard. For those watching at home, we had to have a long pause earlier on because there's no way to describe what happened. We lost all of the lights except for the house lights. The reason for that might be this thing that I just said right now. This is a really big problem. Contempt. Contempt is what a lot of people would love for you to do because it's how you win a war, right? You dehumanize your enemy. Contempt is where you have not just anger, but you have anger with just disgust. And I want to be the first to admit this is the number one thing that I'm seeing in myself throughout this series, how much contempt I've allowed to build up towards these politicians, leaders who I think should know better. When you're sensing contempt, we're going to have these feelings, but when you start finding yourself harboring them, when you start spreading contempt, I want to invite you, look at that as you would a warning light on your dashboard that says, hey, we need to hit pause here and figure this thing out. For what it's worth, I think that's a really important thing for us right now. Okay, all this to say, trench warfare isn't working. Trench warfare isn't working. And I think that with those lights, there could have really been a spiritual thing. Because he would love to keep us in these trenches, divided. It's not working. Can I get an amen to that? Here's our friends Kelvin and Hobbes. They got a great cartoon that summarizes this really well. Kelvin and Hobbes are about to play war. Before they begin, Hobbes asks Kelvin, "Hey, why do we play war and not peace?" Kelvin replies, "Too few role models." And then he begins to explain his game. He says, "I'll be the fearless American defender of liberty and democracy. You can be the loathsome, godless, communist oppressor." Well, they each got these dart guns, and Kelvin says, "All right, we're at war, so if you get hit with a dart, you're dead, and the other side wins." Kelvin says, "Go!" They both fire their weapons at each other. In the next frame, they're looking down at two kill shots that they each have. And the strip ends with Kelvin saying, "It's kind of a stupid game, isn't it?" Does that describe our political world right now, or what? For those of us who've been adopted into God's family, here's what's in our DNA. Listen to this. There is no greater drama in human record than the sight of a few Christians scorned or oppressed by a succession of emperors, bearing all the trials with a fierce tenacity, multiplying quietly, building order while their enemies generated chaos, fighting the sword with the word, brutality with hope, and at last defeating the strongest state that history has ever known. Caesar and Christ had met in the arena, and Christ had won. We didn't win people over by fighting the way people fought. We won people over by modeling something different, something that they longed for at an even deeper level than life in a trench. Before we close today, I want to show you a video. This is a video that's based on a true story from World War I, and it illustrates what we're talking about here really, really well. There's a lot that we don't know about what happened that day, but there's enough stories, there's enough photographic evidence that says something happened. Enough happened that they made this statue to remind us of what can happen when people get out of their trenches. One of the other things, again, there's a lot of details that are fuzzy about what actually happened there, but one of the things that's pretty consistent is they said, you know who didn't like this? The generals. The people who would profit in one way, shape, or form by having us fighting against each other. What was true in World War I about that is also true in our day. Remember that Hawk Newsom that I talked about earlier? You know who didn't like what he did? People in his organization. And I can tell you right now, you know, we will get people when this series is over who are going to be really mad at us because we didn't come out and fire enough hate at the candidate that they don't like. Let's model something different, something that's more helpful. Let's really listen well. Let's really share well. Let's get in these conversations. Let's get out of our trenches. Today we're going to seal our time with a song. It was new to me. It's going to probably be new to a lot of you. The song is called Abandon. It is a great song. It is a song about a posture towards a very different kind of leader. One who stepped out of the trenches of his day. And although he had an army of angels where he could have just commanded them like this, he allowed himself to die on a Roman cross out there in a no man's land to not only defeat what we would think of as an enemy, to defeat death itself. So today I want to invite you, whatever you're doing right now, stop what you're doing, really listen and engage this song and use it as a prayer where you can pledge allegiance to this very different type of leader.